Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show. I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. I am pleased to be with you. It is September 8th, 2019. It is 10:32 Eastern Standard Time, and ladies and gentlemen, I am so damn tired. You cannot appreciate how tired I am, folks. I got up at 7 a.m. today. I went to a training facility, an advanced training facility in Marlboro, New Jersey, called HIT Training. And I did an hour of what's called a HIT class. It's 30 stations, ladies and gentlemen, 30 stations of just this intense workout. And I just got off of work, and I'm like almost tempted to go to bed. I could be a real extremist and go to the gym at 12 o'clock like I normally do on Sundays. I have the energy for it. But I don't want to overdo it. I mean, I could literally do another hour of cardio and lift weights again. But I'm telling you, I did this HIIT class for the first time in my life, ladies and gentlemen, at this place. And it is just I'm just really, really, really sore. Not sore, but just kind of tired, but a good way. You know, like when you do exercise and, like, your heart beats slower and your blood seems like it's flowing slower and just, like, you feel like – really in tune with your body and really, really relaxed. Well, that's how I feel right now, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you, that was my morning at 8 o'clock this morning. And, you know, I've been doing it a lot lately. I'll get into my training regimen as I get into the show here. But we have a great show for you today. Eddie Goldman, the great one. I spoke to him at the Joshua Ruiz press conference at the Bowery in Chinatown on the 6th, on Thursday the 6th. Now, Eddie and I spoke for about a half hour or so, and as always, we hold nothing back. We give our unvarnished opinion about the event, about the fight, and about the boxing media, so on and so forth, Saudi Arabia, all of the different issues that are surrounding this upcoming fight, which really is an intriguing fight. I agree with Eddie Hearn. This is the biggest heavyweight fight of the year. I'm going to talk about that, how you know, the press conference went, you know, what I think about the fight. And we're going to play with an interview I did for Eddie Goldman's show, the No Holds Barred show, in about a few minutes or so. But it was a really, really interesting event because they made kind of a big deal about this. You had to sign up. Usually with Matchroom Boxing and anything with the Zone, they've been very, very friendly with the press. So they don't usually require too many hoops that you have to jump through, but you had to sign up, and they made it like they were gonna like it was gonna be like a big security detail, and they were gonna have to give you press credentials. And we went to I went to Chinatown, which is right outside of Holland Tunnel, off of Canal Street, not too far from Holland Tunnel, and never been there before, never been to this place, didn't know what to expect. I left right from work. I went into work on an off day. And left right from there and drove in because it would have taken me 6 hours to take the trains into the city. It would have been a disaster. And so it was, you know, there's parking right next to the press conference or right down the block. Wasn't too far. And it was good. So I got in there. And as soon as I got in there, there was really, really not a lot of media in this building. And, you know, I just went and they didn't even give me a wristband. I see Eddie as soon as I walk in. We go to our seats, and what do you know? Right to the right of me is Shannon Briggs, big Shannon Briggs, who's just coming off of a doping suspension there. And, you know, Shannon is doing interviews. He's there. We don't know. I don't know if he was there to crash the press conference like he was doing to Klitschko. You know, he sort of made a thing out of, you know, the spontaneous events and you know, I don't know if they're staged, probably staged of him, you know, causing trouble and whatnot. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's funny. I got a chance to speak to him for, you know, just kind of ask him if he's going to cause trouble and whatnot. And, you know, I've always appreciated Shannon Briggs. He seems like a real down-to-earth guy that struggled. He's been in prison for a number of years for, I believe, drug-related offenses. And anybody that's in prison, that's what I consider that to be an accomplishment. That is just no easy feat. I mean, just surviving in prison. You know, I know it's not an accomplishment to go to prison, but surviving and turning around his life and still fighting at the age of, you know, he's got to be 50 years old. And he looked in great shape, and he still can beat, you know, I think 98% of the fighters out there in the heavyweight division. He was there, and he was doing his interviews, and got a chance to talk to him for, you know, a question. I only wanted to ask him one question and whatnot. And he really became part of the promotional process here for the press conference. Nothing negative, all positive energy from him, you know, directed towards Joshua and Ruiz. Wasn't there to challenge anybody. And that was good. It was good to see him there. Always been appreciative of him. And then so we got to sit pretty much right, you know, in the front. There was no media there, very little media there by the time, you know, I got there. Now, this was a small venue, certainly smaller than the Madison Square Garden press conference that Eddie and I went to back in April for the supposed Gerald Miller, Anthony Joshua fight, which never took place. And the media started to build up in there. You know, as the event was supposed to start at 2:00, 2:15, it went over about 45 minutes, half hour or so, and there were a lot of media members there by the time it began and whatnot. And you can't really make much of these press conferences. They had a press conference the day earlier in Saudi Arabia. They flew out Joshua and, you know, Andy Ruiz, and it must have been very, very difficult. And at that time, we were experiencing, you know, weather. There was impending weather conditions, approaching hurricanes, and so, you know, Joshua had to fly right out. And Eddie and I spoke about this, and I'm going to play that in just a few moments. We really kind of went in depth about the fight itself and all the different issues concerning that. But from a press standpoint, I thought it was very, very good. I thought it was you know, very engaging. Eddie Hearn, to his credit, stayed, you know, about an hour after talking to the media, which a lot of promoters don't do, Dana White. And Andy Ruiz spoke to the media as well. He was surrounded by media. It was very, very difficult to get him. Anthony Joshua, on the other hand, left pretty much right after the media, the press conference ended, and he probably had to take a flight back to the UK. He definitely had a busy schedule. There was, as I said, approaching bad weather, so, you know, I don't fault him for getting out of there when he did and whatnot. But this was, by and large, a positive press conference. Hearn defended Saudi Arabia, defended this fight taking place in Saudi Arabia, and was asked some good questions, of course, by Eddie Goldman and whatnot. And I'm going to play you that right now. So this is my discussion with Eddie Goldman for the No Holds Barred podcast. I'm not sure when Eddie's going to add that show, but this is us at the Bowery Capital Center in Chinatown right after the Joshua Rees press conference ended on September 6th there. So here it is.
All right, we're here at Das Kapital, I think is the name of the place, which is an appropriate name, or the Kapital, actually, in Manhattan, near Little Italy, in Chinatown, and at the tail end of the Ruiz Joshua II press conference in New York, and we're here with Bob Carson, and it's good to see you.
Yeah, Eddie, it's good to see you, man. Appreciate it.
Now, this press conference, a lot of it was very pro forma, the way this was going on. So they're going to be posting, it's just, I'm sure the video's up already, of the formal part of the press conference, a lot of one-on-one interviews going on afterwards. Just give us your impression of what this says about this fight, because that to me is the real question, not so much the ins and outs of this press conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions to be asked. I mean, to be answered with regards to this fight. There's certainly a lot of controversy with Saudi Arabia, as we've seen in recent years. Not to get too political and whatnot. But the real question for me is, as somebody that doesn't follow boxing obviously as closely as you do, is what's going on with Anthony Joshua. You know, when we saw Anthony Joshua when he gave his opening remarks, which I found to be somewhat inspiring, he talked about losses. He talked about how he lost as an amateur and how there's people in this room that have lost, and if they've given up, they wouldn't be in this room. So losing is part of the journey. It was a very short and inspiring speech, and he talked about how he wasn't himself during the first fight and whatnot. So that's really the question. One of the questions going into the second fight, December 7th, is Anthony Joshua, quote unquote, the real deal? Is he really one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time? Was he really himself that night? Can he come back from adversity like he's done before in the past, having a tough upbringing, and win, and conquer his demons? I don't know. We'll find out December 7th. You never can tell based on someone's appearance and based on how they look during a press conference. The other question is Andy Ruiz. We know Andy Ruiz is a very, very tough fighter. We know, obviously, he's one of the best fighters out there. But just really, how does he stack up in terms of the upper echelon of heavyweight fighters out there? There's no question he's obviously one of the best out there. But is he really the best heavyweight fighter out there? Of course, you've got other champions, other potential fights, but these fighters are tied up with other organizations, other promoters. So right now, Anthony Joshua, this is the rematch. This is quote unquote the biggest fight of the year, and I think I would agree with that on the heavyweight front. So that is in terms of the fight itself. That I think those are the two biggest questions, certainly that I have as a casual boxing observer. I mainly cover mixed martial arts, whatnot. As far as the press conference, I got to tell you, I wasn't going to come down here because I found out the structure of it. They kind of announced this. It seemed like a formal endeavor. You had to apply for the press conference, which is different from previous Matchbox press conferences, matchroom boxing press conferences, because when we went to the Miller Joshua press conference in April, it was less formal. It was at Madison Square Garden. We went in there, and it was more full, a lot more media, seemingly a lot more media, but it was less formal. This was more formal. We had a fill-in, and they granted us access. And when I got here, I found out the structure. I found out that there wasn't any one-on-one media. They stipulated that before we got here. And so I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to come here. You know, I wasn't familiar with the Bowery. I'm not a New York City guy. I'm a Jersey guy and whatnot. And I'm not familiar with the train system here. I usually take the train into the Madison Square Garden, and it's easy for me, but I don't know how to take the other train, so it would have been more and more a hassle for me to take the train. So I ended up driving in, and when I got here, it wasn't as formal as I thought it was going to be. However, the venue seems to be a little arcane, a little bit stiff, the chairs, but it's a nice older venue, and it's an intimate setting, so to speak, and I like some of the design. It's nice, the design. The scenery is nice. You get a feel for the fighters. You're up close and personal, I think, no matter where you are. And I got some good shots, some good video on whatnot. So it wasn't bad in that sense. It was worth it for me. You had Shannon Briggs here. Shannon Briggs has almost become part of the promotional process here. You know, they allowed him in. And I asked Shannon Briggs before. I said, are you going to behave? You know, he's a personable guy, Shannon. For all his antics with Klitschko and everything like that, he does have a personal side to him. You got to appreciate the adversity. You got to appreciate the fact that he's an older guy. He's still fighting. He's in great shape, and he probably still can beat 90-95% of the heavyweights out there. I don't think there's any question about that. Coming off of his PED suspension, as I understand it, he is cleared to fight and whatnot. It was good to see him. He was positive. It was all positive energy on his part. He wasn't here to disrupt or be center of attention and whatnot. And it was a really overall, I think it was a good positive experience here, just from that aspect. And I think it was a good press conference. I do agree with Eddie Hearn when he said, these guys are positive, seemingly positive role models. It wasn't a lot of trash talk as we saw during the Jarrell Miller Anthony Joshua press conference. It was almost like a different Anthony Joshua at that press conference versus this press conference. So it was really, really good. I'm glad I came. Just one last thing, Eddie, from a logistical standpoint, it was easy for me to come into the city, come from Holland Tunnel, and get parking. There's parking right across the street here on Canal Street. So it wasn't difficult for me at all, just logistically coming here, because we're in Chinatown, as you mentioned, and we're right across from a parking garage. So logistically coming from New Jersey, it was easier for me. So in that standpoint, it's good. Overall, it was a positive experience. And to his credit, Andy Ruiz is still here talking to the press. He is still here, so it's over an hour ended already, and he's still here. Joshua left early. I'm sure he probably had to take a plane somewhere. There's a hurricane coming, or remnants of a hurricane coming. So I don't know. I don't want to hold that against him. So just to put things in perspective for everybody out there.
Well, they're having another one of these on Friday in London, and I think because of that, we didn't see really people from the UK media, the European media here. But I think it was, considering the nature of and importance of this fight, relatively underwhelming turnout. Because, as you said, they made this big deal. No one will be admitted unless you're approved. And yet, when you just came here, you just walked straight in, sat down, and it was not filled, whereas the ones at the Garden with Miller were much more filled. Again, that had the European press, that had a lot of New York people because of Miller. This one just seemed a little bit underwhelming, and I'm wondering, because Joshua lost the first fight, because this one is in Saudi Arabia, and it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people to cover it. I think it's going to be prohibitive for women to try to cover it, despite what they say. They're going to have to cover up their whole bodies, to do this in Diriyah, which is outside Riyadh, which is a UNESCO site. It's not like Jeddah, which, you know, they want to build up as a tourist place. It's a little different than that. I'm wondering what the buzz is on this, because Joshua lost, and a lot of haters on Joshua. And Ruiz is a really good fighter, but he did have that loss. It was a very close fight to Parker, but it's not like he really shined in that fight. He looked really good against in his previous fight with Dimitrenko, but Dimitrenko's not a top 10 guy. But he really just blew him out. He did what he had to do in a much more impressive fashion than a lot of people expected. So I'm wondering if there's still a little trepidation for people about this fight. But it has the potential to be the biggest heavyweight fight in the world this year in 2019. They all claim, the organizers, everything's running smoothly. Eddie Hearn says there's a Saudi boxing commission that's going to work with the British Boxing Board of Control and one of the American commissions that the Ruiz camp will pick out. We'll see, because they did have other fights there, but, you know, you have Amir Khan and Billy Dib was a mismatch, both in terms of skill and size. And then you did have the World Boxing Super Series Finals,
yes,
with Callum Smith and George Groves in 2018, but they had the World Boxing Super Series running it, and that was not a really one of these marquee events in the world as important. That was a very important fight, crown the best super middleweight in the world, and of course the tournament winner in that. But this one is going to be for who has the bulk of the heavyweight world titles. So we'll see if there are any hiccups along the way. There's still a lot of questions to be answered about this, and some of them got answered here. I don't go much by demeanor.
Right.
Press conferences, I'll just give one example from the past that you give many. The rematch between Lennox Lewis and Haseem Rahman, where Lewis did not prepare enough for the altitude and the time difference in South Africa, and he was doing this movie where he had to film the scene with Vladimir Klitschko, and he's, you know, if you've ever done movies, you know that just hurry up and wait, that really is draining. And Rahman got a month early into South Africa and, of course, knocked out Lewis. And in the press conference leading up to that, Rahman, very different from this, Rahman was very arrogant and trash talk, and Lennox Lewis looked a little flustered and bewildered, because Lennox has never been the glibest speaker out there and is much more reserved. But as a number of people have said before, it's not a debate. This is a fight. So, and of course, in the rematch, Lewis had his way, knocked out Rahman, and recaptured the belt, and a couple of years later retired as the recognized world heavyweight champion. A different stage of his career than either Andy Ruiz or Anthony Joshua. But what goes on at the press conference is not, right, you know, necessarily mean anything other than their entertainment value, and it's not the WWE or the imitators, right, the UFC. You can't read too much into that. The question is, what was wrong with Joshua?
Right.
Does he know it? And can he and will he correct it? And with Andy Ruiz knowing, Manny Rowlett said he expects Joshua to be more cautious. What does that mean if the fight goes into the later rounds, and there aren't a whole bunch of knockdowns as you had in that great third round in the first round? A lot of questions to be answered. But we'll see where the anticipation is. And the other thing, of course, as you mentioned, is Saudi Arabia,
right,
a country with one of the worst human rights records in the world, the treatment of the media, the murder and dismemberment, yeah, of Jamal Khashoggi, the war in Yemen that's going on, that apparently one of its allies, the UAE, has switch sides in that. A lot of intrigue going on. The question of the world economy, what's going to happen with that, is Aramco is preparing for an IPO, which is the business people are watching, but everyone should watch what really happens with all that. There are a lot of questions that have to be answered for this. But it was as a press conference, I just felt it was a little underwhelming, a little flat. Not a superman of energy. Perhaps they're being more reserved because they're not going to go into Saudi Arabia cursing and running crazy and all that. But we'll see. We'll see where this leads. And they got one more of these to go.
Yeah, I agree with you with a bunch of different things you said there. One thing, I mean, there's just so many different things. I mean, as far as Saudi Arabia, I wish that there was some sort of backlash or some sort of opposition to doing business with Saudi Arabia based on the things that you mentioned and their oppression, but there's not. We saw this with the WWE. There is virtually none of that, and because of the political climate in America, that's not going to happen. And I'm sure that both of these fighters are going to make a lot of money, and the tax issue too. We're talking about taxation. Probably not going to have to pay taxation. We don't know that. I'll have to check that out. But one thing that I want to add too about
they will in there. I know Ruiz will have to pay it in the United States.
But I know in mixed martial arts, I mean, there was a fighter, Mike Perry, who fought, I think it was in Brazil, or don't quote me on the country, but he had to pay taxes in the country that he fought. In most countries, you have to pay taxes in that country.
Usually withhold it
right.
For an out-of-country fight.
Yeah, and then he ended up having, he owed the IRS. I mean, I'm sure that they're going to be making a substantial amount of money from the Saudi fighting in Saudi Arabia, and Hearn did his best to try to paint the Saudi government in the most favorable light, considering the negative backlash. But there is no political repercussions, I think, from this fight. So that's why they did it. The one thing I'll add too is there's a lot of focus on Anthony Joshua as far as his mindset. And what's going on, but Andy Ruiz talks about how he's the same person, how he's this, that, and I remember on Rogan's show he talked about having a substantial entourage, and you look at his entourage here, and it's common, I understand, for heavyweight champions to have entourage, but you talk about the mansions and the cars and this and that. By definition, he's not the same person. Okay, now that could be nothing, that could be something, who knows. He looks to be in good shape. I mean, if you just look at him physically, he's probably around 265, 270, 280, if I had to guess. He probably looks like the same weight that he fought, Joshua the first time, but who knows? But that could factor in. How many times have we seen these fighters, when they become heavyweight champion, they're different people, and then, they made their money, and then they're not the same people. They don't have that same hunger. They don't have that same drive. That could be the case. It would not surprise me. I don't think it would surprise anybody. If that happens, so that's a question that we got to sort of examine too, going forward. This also could be if Joshua wins, it certainly could set up a trilogy. There's a lot that could happen here, and certainly, this fight will do very, very well. I think all eyes, for all intents and purposes, are going to be on Anthony Joshua. There's going to be a lot of pressure still. On Anthony Joshua at this juncture in his career, at this young age. He's still got a lot to prove. He's got a lot of weight on his shoulders. And, we're just going to have to see what happens here. Yeah, they have another press conference tomorrow. One thing I will say that I agree with Eddie Hearn on is nobody really could have predicted this. The traditional notion was that boxing is dead, that mixed martial arts is on the rise, which we can debate this all day long, but who would have predicted an Andy Ruiz 5-6 months ago? Who would have predicted some of these other stars that we're seeing now emerging that are partnering up with DAZN and other streaming services? So it's really, really a remarkable time to be a fan of boxing. There's plenty of content out there. I just wish, kind of going off topic here, that we can see some of the heavyweight fights that the fans want to see instead of, a Tyson Fury fighting a Thomas Schwartz, or however pronounce his name. I think that there's going to be a time where we're going to want to see the real fights and whatnot. But and nonetheless, we have a real, real good heavyweight rematch December 7th, 2019. I will say that Matchroom Boxing, just from a press standpoint, as somebody who doesn't cover boxing, obviously, as closely as you do, Eddie, over the years, has been very accommodating with the press, with all independent media, unlike the UFC. They've been very, very nice. I've had access to Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua, not on a one-on-one basis, but at these press conferences, which is more than I could say for the UFC, having covered mixed martial arts since 2006. That's very, very encouraging. And it makes me want to come down here from New Jersey to cover these events. So there's a lot going on in the sport of boxing. It's a very, very exciting time. Both of these fighters are very, very young fighters, too, which I think bodes well for the sport of boxing, for the heavyweight division. We don't see that in mixed martial arts. You don't see a young and vibrant heavyweight division in both UFC or Bellator. And that really, really says a lot about, I think, the future in boxing, at least now as it stands. So, you know, we should enjoy this. We certainly should. But it's important, like you, Eddie, it's important to ask these questions. It's important to ask questions about Saudi Arabia, be critical. Not be, you know, stenographers like much of the access-driven boxing press and UFC press is. You know, some of these guys, I know how it is in boxing, I know how in UFC is, and I'm sure you can attest this. They're access-driven. Their careers and livelihood depend on access and approval. And so you're not going to get the hard questions.
It's not as bad, but it's almost as bad.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I mean, that's it's all politics. It's all, you know, buddy, who you know, and who's liked, and not necessarily who does the best job or who asks the toughest questions. And it's frustrating. It's like that in every industry. And so guys like you and guys, you know, that have integrity are facing an uphill battle in this corrupt and rotten system where, you know, the negative values and behaviors get rewarded, and oftentimes the worst among us get ahead in the line. So I you know, admire what you're doing. We're interviewing now on this old IATA microphone, which is just absolutely historic. I can't tell you how many times I've spoken into this microphone for probably, you know, 13, 14 years, man. It's historic, and it's just goes to show you, you know, everybody's getting this new technology. Oh, we've got to get the latest this and the latest that.
This mic is still the standard mic. If you read the reviews of this thing, this one, the Shure, the SM58, yeah, it's about this. But today, even today, this is still the standard. This is the best.
Yeah, and it's about commitment. It's about, you know, it's about loyalty in a sense. And sometimes it's about staying true to you know, what you are and not necessarily changing, you know, being fickle at the drop of a hat and whatnot. So, you know, look, I'm glad I came out here. I'm hoping that I'll be able to cover the event or at least watch the event. December 7th. That's not always easy to do when you have 17 jobs under this system. But I will make
one advantage of the zone. It'll come on Eastern time in the U.S. approximately 5 in the afternoon.
Okay.
But they will archive it. So if you're unable to do it then, they'll keep it up there. I don't know how long they'll keep it up there, but certainly sometime later in the day or the night. I do that a lot of times. I can't watch a fight live. I'll stay off, you know, the email and the social media and watch it without knowing the result.
Yeah, and that's great. Where other streaming services, I don't think you can do that. That's very, very important, and it makes it easier for, you know, the consumer, because there's going to be millions and millions of people watching this worldwide for sure. The Zone, you know, depending upon the estimates, has, you know, tens of millions of subscribers. I've seen estimates of over 30 million subscribers.
No. They worldwide? Have about 4 million worldwide,
okay.
And they haven't announced figures, and 1-point-something million in the United States. Those are the latest figures, but I think that with this fall lineup that they're going to have when they announce a Canelo fight, when they announce a Golovkin fight, with this fight, I think they're going to pick up some more, because as you said, I don't think people are, you know, going head over heels to see Tyson Fury against Otto Valim and Deontay Wilder, who knows if he's even going to fight. He says he's going to fight against King Kong Ortiz this year, but who knows if that'll even happen. So in the heavyweight division, this is easily the biggest fight remaining in the year. And, you know, the other thing you mentioned, there's two things I want to say as we start to wrap it up. First off, with Anthony Joshua overcoming things. As a youth, he talks about how he was getting in trouble, fighting on the street, involved with the wrong crowd. A lot of the stories that you heard, at one point the cops had to put an ankle monitor on him, and he'd been incarcerated for a while, and he was trying to get on the Olympic team. He's fighting in the amateurs. Then he got knocked out by David Price at one point, coming, you know, straight out from that. And he turned himself around from that. When he got into the Olympic finals, he was still very raw. He hadn't been fighting very long. And if you watch his Olympic final match with Camerale, the veteran amateur of Italy, after the first two rounds, he was losing the fight. And he came back. Again, he was an amateur, and he looked like an amateur then. But he came back, and he was able to edge out a win. It was controversial, but he came back in that third round to take that victory. And so now he looks sluggish in the first fight. You know, nobody's saying exactly what was wrong, if there was anything wrong in particular. And he and his team have to figure out what to do differently. People are expecting, Manny Robles said that he's going to come out more cautiously. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see what he tries to do. But he's come back from adversity before. These guys are only 29. I think maybe by fight time they'll be 30. They're still relatively young, especially for heavyweights in their career. So he's come back before. The question is, does he have the talent and know-how and training? Does he need? He said maybe he's going to add somebody to his training camp other than Rob McCracken, who comes more from the amateur game in Sheffield. I'm going to see. There are a lot of questions to be answered for this. So I think interest may build in it. The other thing I just want to say briefly about Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I can't think of too many places in the world that aren't, too many governments or countries that aren't gross human rights violators in one way or another. And you might find some small countries where they mainly just oppress their own people without committing atrocities and genocide and, you know, mass executions and all of that stuff. But you could say, well, should they hold it in the United States based on what Trump is doing with these so-called detention camps, with the U.S., you know, continuing a lot of military activities and subversive activities elsewhere? Should you hold it in the U.K., which is going crazy and the whole government system is falling apart over Brexit? Where should they hold it? In China, where they had all these camps for the Uyghurs,
right,
for Muslims? You're going to start to eliminate one country after the other. So I think it's important to call out all these human rights issues and atrocities. But if we start disqualifying countries from places to hold fights, we're just going to be left with some little isolated, unpopulated island somewhere.
Yeah.
And which obviously you can't hold, you know, this kind of fight. So, but that's my view of it. I'm not big on these boycotts of these countries, because then the question is, why are you going to boycott one and not boycott another? But you can still fight against them in other ways. But calling out sporting events, I don't know that's the right way to go. And yeah, it's a money grab, of course, but, you know, that's why we're in, we close it in, Capital.
Well said, Eddie. Listen, man, we've been friends for many years. We've been doing these interviews for many, many years, man, covering these events. And, you know, this is just one more event. And, you know, I got to tell you, it's been just really a roller coaster ride. It really has. I'm so glad that you're you're ticking, you're doing well, and it's a struggle, man. Every day it's a struggle, every single day. So a lot of what Joshua was saying resonated with me. I was very, very passionate, very inspiring what he was saying. And Ruiz, too. You know, I mean, it was good to see Ruiz's father up there. Good to see the Mexican pride, the Mexican heritage, especially in this political climate, you know, that we're seeing now. So it was overall, like I said, I had a good impression of what happened. But, you know, it's good to ask these questions from a perspective that I think you bring and that I bring, that oftentimes you're not going to see, you know, represented by too many, you know, in this day and age. So it's very, very important, the work that you do. I really, really appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully we'll cover more of these events as we grow older but wiser and better, man. We're getting older. We're getting better, though, man.
I hope so. Thank you, and thanks for coming.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right, we're back live here, and that was me and Eddie Goldman at the Joshua Ruiz press conference, too. And so we're going to have to see what happens. I'm curious to see what happens in this fight. And, you know, nothing really has changed. Some people are calling for Joshua to change his corner after the first fight, but I don't necessarily think that's or change his team. I don't necessarily think that's going to necessarily be the answer for him. You know, Joshua, you have to assume, is smart enough to realize, you know, what is and what isn't working for him. So we will see. Now, next you had the UFC 214 or 242 that took place yesterday, and this was also in a Arab country, and this was in Dubai, the United, you know, this was in United Arab Emirates, and it was at 2:00 Eastern time that it was on. And I, you know, listen, this is another one card event. I didn't really care for any other fight other than the main event between Khabib and Dustin Poirier. That was the fight that everybody was looking forward to. And, you know, the Paul Felder versus Edson Barboza fight. I thought Edson won the fight, but they gave it to Felder, who I felt the announcers were really pulling to for. You know, that was a close fight, but it just should have gone to Edson Barboza. Barboza looked like he was pissed at the decision. You also had, you know, on the undercard, you had a female fight between Andrea Lee and JoJo Calderwood. I thought Andrea Lee won that fight, but again, another very, very close fight. And then, you know, the other fights I really, really didn't care for. You know, Dabi Hamos versus Islam Makhachev. You know, I didn't really, really care for that. Even though, obviously, some people were looking forward to that more so than the co-main event, which is Felder versus Barboza. You know, you had what other fights that took place on that card that I can think of that just kind of went. You know, pretty much that's all I can remember. I'm just kind of in a rut here. I'm just trying to remember, but that's really all that stood out to me. You know, those are like really the three, you know, biggest fights of the card. And, you know, Curtis Blaydes fought. I didn't see that fight, but he beat his opponent, and that was really it. You know, and the main event didn't really surprise anybody. Khabib did what he did. You know, I thought maybe Poirier had a chance to win the fight, but, you know, that's what Khabib does. So the question is, who does he fight next? Is it Conor or is it Tony? The UFC obviously is very ambivalent about this because, you know, it's a money grab. That if they want to have Conor fight, they're going to have him fight. And Conor has indicated that he wants to have a rematch in Moscow. However, you know, he's got legal issues, so who knows if he's even going to fight again. It's very, very difficult to say. I would like to see Khabib fight Tony and then, you know, kind of just sail off into the sunset. You know what I mean? Who knows what's going to happen? He was talking about fighting George St. Pierre for his legacy or donating his purse to charity, Khabib. And, you know, I just have mixed feelings on Khabib. I really do. And his whole band of merry thugs that he hangs out with there, you know, while preaching Islam and this, that, and the other thing. So, not a surprise there. The results, what they were. But, again, yeah, credit Dustin Poirier. Big fan of Dustin Poirier. Real class act. And he'll be back to fight again. You know, be back to fight another day. Still a very, very competitive division. And still a lot of matchups to make, you know, for fighters, all fighters in that division. So we will definitely see what happens there. It's about 11:15. Here, I'm so tired. I can't wait to go to bed, folks. I'm doing like a 60-mile bike ride on Tuesday. Yeah, tomorrow's Monday. On Tuesday, along the Delaware River Canal. That's going to be something. We got to go through Trenton, which is going to be dangerous right when school gets out. I'm going with three other people, so I'm not going by myself. But this is the first time I've ever done anything like that. And so I'm really excited about this. I'm like, whoa, I got to see what this is all about. And 60 miles, I'm off the next day. My job, Kmart, oh, my God, we're about to go under. My one store is closed down, and just a matter of time before I lose my job. Of course, again, what else is new, ladies and gentlemen? I'm going to be training at Pellegrino's Mixed Martial Arts. I'm probably going to start maybe this week. I'm going to officially sign up this week. And I'm going to reintroduce myself to, you know, sparring and grappling and do what I can to try to learn self-defense. Because at the end of the day, it's all you have. We're going to start to see more and more people do this. More and more people are going to start to take self-defense and start to, you know, train MMA. That's what they do in Dagestan. It's a war-torn country, and Dagestan has more MMA fighters than any other country, because it's all they have. And well, here in the United States, you know, we don't really have anything. So it's pretty much, you know, self-defense, physical fitness, and MMA. And that's where I'm at, you know. And so I went to this facility in Marlboro. It's one of Pellegrino's facilities, and I didn't even know this place existed. I've driven past it so many times. And it was a very, very nice place. Very, very nice people. I got a good vibe from everybody. And I'll be training there soon. Who knows where that's going to lead, folks? Who knows? You know? I wouldn't surprise me. Wherever it goes. So, at the very least, it's a win-win for me. You know, so I can't wait to do that. I'll certainly keep you apprised as to what's going on. And with my MMA revival, ladies and gentlemen, remember, Bob Carson fears nobody. I have no shortage of courage. That was the case when I did MMA years ago, and it's certainly the case now. The question is, how much skill can I acquire? Because I'm taking it seriously. I'm training very, very seriously now. I'm putting on muscle weight now. Still losing weight, but not as rapidly as I was. If I told you the amount of working out I'm doing, you'd think I was crazy. You'd think, whoa, how can you do that? I only have 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. I'm on 700-800 calories a day, and I have just an unyielding amount of energy. Like, you know, even now I'm tired, I'm yawning, but I can go to the gym, you know. So it's really, really remarkable, you know, what I've been doing. You know, not to sound too, you know, but still, it's just the truth. It really is. I speak the truth here, ladies and gentlemen. And you people are just going to have to deal with it. I've been posting a lot on Instagram. Just figured out how to post stories and how to do this, you know, the stuff there. So, you know, you can follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/BobCarsonMMA. Facebook, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. Got a lot going on, folks. So you can keep up with me on those platforms. And I encourage you to keep up with me. You know, do it. I can lose weight. I can do all this stuff. So can you. You know, I can reverse liver disease. So can you. You know, the people just put impediments in their head, and that's it. And Lord knows I've done that for quite some time. And I'm starting to reverse that now. And, you know, my life is starting to move in another direction, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens down the road, folks. We will. But big thanks to Eddie Goldman. I'm working on getting Front Row Brian on the show. I should have him on this Tuesday or Wednesday. Tuesday I've got the bike ride, so it's probably not going to be on Tuesday, but maybe Wednesday. I'll see if I can get him. So I got his phone number. I promise you he'll be on the program. I can't wait to talk to him. It's been so long. I've never actually spoken to him, but somebody's got to talk to him since this whole Ian Kidd thing and Bloody Elbow and this ridiculous MMA media. He's still going strong. Front Row Brian. We appreciate him. We respect him here on Carson's Corner, ladies and gentlemen. So that's it. Working on getting him. I'm sure we will get him very, very soon. Still going to my weight loss doctor again. I'm probably about 220 pounds, 224, 25 pounds, whatever. Like to get down to 200, maybe 185. And it's probably going to be a little bit slower now because I'm starting to put on a little muscle. I have water weight now, you know, and, you know, I'm still doing well, just trucking, just going along, you know. I'll be looking for a new job soon. Okay, my job is set to be eliminated, of course. That's inherent. Working 66 hours a week, ladies and gentlemen, in addition to all this training. 66 hours a week. That's like the new normal now. There's no such thing as 40-hour work weeks. It's you know, 60, 70 hours a week at the minimum. It's really depressing. It really is. No wonder why so many people are alienated. It's because of this and whatnot. So, yep, you had UFC 242 in the books. And should be some more interesting events here. I may try to go to Bellator next month. I got to go. I'm just getting really, really tired. But anyway, I told you that you can keep up with me. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.